AI agents are everywhere, automating tasks and making decisions at machine speed. But agents make mistakes. Just one rogue agent can do big damage before you even notice. Rubrik Agent Cloud is the only platform that helps you monitor agents, set guardrails, and rewind mistakes, so you can unleash agents, not risk. Accelerate your AI transformation at rubrik.com. That's rubrik.com.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
Check one, two. Check one, two. Welcome to the Film Room Podcast. I'm your host, Andy Proctor. And in this show, I break down the game of college football and give you a quick listen scouting report to give you everything you'll need to know each week as the Utes and Cougs buckle up their chin straps. Listen in and level up. The Film Room is your weekly game plan. Break. Okay, everyone, welcome to, what's this, week four of the college football season. This will be week four and game four for University of Utah. Today we are going to do some film study on the Wyoming game from this last weekend, where the Utes triumphed over the Cowboys 31-6, and then we'll take some time to do our scouting report for the Texas Tech Red Raiders game this coming Saturday for the Fox Big Noon kickoff game at 10 a.m. So diving back real quick, Utah went into Laramie this weekend, and they had a little bit of a tougher time than they imagined they were going to have, but they still came out on top 31-6. Story of the game for Utah, starting with a positive, I think the time of possession was great. They had a 36-minute time of possession compared to Wyoming's 24. They had pretty good production throughout the entire game. They just seemed to struggle with production in the red zone, or really anywhere in enemy territory in that first half. The game started as such. They had a 9-play drive, 48 yards, 4 minutes, and a field goal, followed by a 10-play drive for 60 yards, 4.5 minutes, missed field goal, 16 plays, 72 yards, 6.5 minutes, missed field goal, 10 plays, 26 yards, only a minute and a half, but a blocked field goal right before half. Which, by the way, I have to mention, you know, so that's 4 field goal attempts in the first half. That's obviously a problem. But a small kind of tangent, I don't know if we can be calling our kicker Legatron or Legzilla or whatever it is they were calling him until we've seen him make more than one out of every 4 field goals in a game. I think that's maybe a good place for us to start, is to wait for the nickname to stick to maybe some game performance. Anyway, those first 4 series compared to in the second half when they went touchdown, 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 10-play drive, 19-play drive, 6-play drive, all going for 83, 78, and 75 yards, respectively. So much, much better offensive performance in the second half. Another negative, or something I'm sure that Kyle Whittingham and the Utes will be focusing on this weekend was, or this week in practice, was all the holding and all the blocks in the back that held the Utes back. There were a couple of other penalties that I thought were pretty bad. One pass interference call that was called on Smith Snowden, which I don't know how you can be called for pass interference when you don't touch the defender and, in fact, you swat the ball away. I don't know how that works, but 10 penalties for over 100 yards, or I think for exactly 100 yards. So 100 yards wiped out for the Utes, unfortunately. Devin Dampier, again, this week, I feel like, for me, it's just so confusing. Every week I say this, you guys are probably getting sick of me saying this, but it's like the shrugging emoji every time I watch Devin Dampier play football. I'm always impressed. I'm so grateful we have him, but I'm always surprised to see what his stat line ends up being. 27 for 41, which is a 66% completion percentage, which is pretty awesome. He threw for 230 yards, threw for 2 touchdowns, and he led the team with 86 yards of rushing. So, again, as much as we thought that Utah maybe struggled, at least in the first half of this week against Wyoming, Devin had another solid day. I don't think they're Heisman numbers. In fact, I know that they're not Heisman numbers. And I know that a lot of folks in you know, Ute, you know, fandom are throwing around the H word a lot. I think that's pretty wishful thinking at this point. Like I said, I'm super grateful to have Devin Dampier on the team. I think he's going to lead us to a conference championship game, maybe even a conference championship and a CFP playoff berth. But I don't think the H word is going to fit him, at least not this year. Maybe as a run-up for next year. Utah on the ground, they had 311 yards overall with 4 rushers, all having greater than 60 yards rushing in the game. So it was real team effort. Number 9, Ryan Davis, was our best receiver again, totaling 10 receptions for 91 yards. Catch of the game, though, goes to number 12, Larry Simmons, whose only reception was an 8-yard touchdown pass after Devin Dampier. He pulled the Jameis Winston. If you know what I'm talking about, there was a game, I think it was a college football playoff game, back when Jameis Winston was at Florida State. He fumbled the ball out of his own hand as he pulled the ball back to throw, and Devin Dampier did that same thing. But he was able to turn around, pick the ball back up, and huck a ball right to the sideline in the end zone to number 12, Larry Simmons, who was able to catch it, bring it down for a touchdown. Utah was +1 in the turnover battle this game with an interception by Jackson Benny. This is his second interception of the year. And also they recovered the fumble by Landert Barton, which Utah unfortunately fumbled right back to Wyoming just a couple plays later. Defensively, Utah was awesome. They held Wyoming to 229 yards of offense, most of which they accumulated in the fourth quarter. Wyoming only had 108 yards of offense through the third quarter. John Henry Daly was a defensive standout in this game, logging 6 solo tackles, including 2 sacks and a pass deflection. From a special teams perspective, Rashawn Glover had a great night as far as punt and kickoff returns go. He would have amassed about 90 yards on returns had a long, you know, 50-plus yard return not been wiped out due to one of the holding calls we mentioned earlier. And honestly, it was a holding call that didn't even need to happen. It was a hold or a block in the back that didn't even need to happen because it was away from the play. Anyway, the Utes came out on top, which is the important part. They covered the spread, winning 31-6, and got out of Laramie, Wyoming, 3-0, as they were hoping to do, you know, from preseason. I think if you'd told any of the Utah staff or any of the Utah players that they start the season 3-0, they would take that in a heartbeat. So, way to go, Utes. Way to start the year the way that we all knew you could, and honestly, the way that we knew you should. The scouting report, like we mentioned, for the Texas Tech game this coming Saturday, the Red Raiders will face off against the Utes on Fox's Big Noon kickoff game at 10 a.m. Mountain Time. The Utes are a 3.5-point favorite as the home team. The home team gets a 3-point advantage in football, which means that the folks in Vegas think that this game is essentially going to be a barn burner that comes down to the last play. I quite agree with them. Literally, either team could win this game with essentially even odds, according to the odds makers. The over and under is 58.5 points, so they're expecting both defenses to give up more than they have pretty much all season thus far, and expecting an offensive battle back and forth. I don't know if I agree with that, at least from Utah's perspective. I mean, I'd obviously love for the Utes offense to put up, you know, 28 to 31 points against this defense, because I think if they do that, it's very likely that Utah's defense holds Tech to less than that. I likely see this game as more of a moderate scoring game. You know, I'd put the over under about, you know, 45 or so, expecting maybe like a 21 to 15 type of game, something like that. I mean, Tech has played AR Pine Bluff, Kent State, and Oregon State thus far. You know, they're totally untested. They haven't played an away game yet. I don't think you can look at their offensive production as reliable to give you an idea as to what they're going to be able to accomplish against Utah this coming Saturday morning. I just don't see them scoring 30 plus points against Utah. And I also don't see Utah's offense putting up those numbers either. Anyway, I'll put my prediction at the end of this episode. These teams have only faced off twice before, by the way, in 1972 and 73. I think they played a home and away series, with Texas Tech winning both of those contests. First game was pretty much a blowout, with Texas Tech winning. And then the second game was much closer, it was like 22-29 or something like that, back in 73. So there's very little history between these two schools, though I'm sure Utah is wanting to reverse the momentum of that series this weekend. Diving into Texas Tech as a team, head coach, I call him Coach Show Me the Money, Joey McGuire. As he enters his fourth year as the head coach for the Red Raiders, they have had winning seasons and bowl appearances every year since he showed up. His success is likely related to his emphasis on recruiting the best talent that the state of Texas has to offer. I think he prioritizes getting talent from the state of Texas. I have to imagine it's hard contending for that, you know, highest level of talent with schools like Texas and Oklahoma and A&M right around the corner. He is 26-16 as the head coach of Texas Tech, including wins against both Texas and Oklahoma in their last year in the Big 12 in 2022. Diving in offensively, offensive coordinator, also the quarterback coach for the Red Raiders, is a guy named Mac Leftwich. He actually is a guy that I think Utah pursued to fill their offensive coordinator vacancy this offseason, but he ended up going to Texas Tech. As I'm sure most of you that follow sports, or at least football, have seen this. If you haven't, Texas Tech, they went all out this offseason in the transfer portal, spent a lot of money on guys, spent a lot of money on coaches, and Coach Mac Leftwich is definitely one of those guys that they went all out for. In his first season for the Red Raiders, he's arrived after turning Texas State into one of the most competitive G5 teams over the last 2 years. He's only coached at the lower level, meaning FCS or FBS G5 teams. So when we say G5, we mean in conferences like the Mountain West or the Sun Belt Conference or Conference USA. These conferences that are not Power 5 conferences, you know, if you're not from, you know, that area down in Texas or the Southeast, or a lot of schools you've probably never heard of, right? We've all heard of Air Force or Wyoming or Colorado State because we live, you know, we live west, and we're familiar with Mountain West teams. But Coach Leftwich coached a lot in FCS Division II football, and now currently is his first year in a Power 5 or Power 4 conference now. I'm sure he's not wanting to waste his opportunity. Texas Tech is averaging 57 points per game this year with the air raid offense, having scored more than 60 points twice, although I think it's notable that they've played against pretty mediocre talent thus far. Let's go over personnel first. I think it makes more sense to do it that way, and then we'll talk, generally speaking, about what they're going to want to do with that personnel. Quarterback number two, his name is Baron Morton. Baron Morton, he's 6'2", 220 pound senior. So he's not super tall, but he's not short. He's pretty, he's got some good meat on him. He's not a small guy you can take down pretty easily. He's, so far this season, he is an impressive 57 for 81, which means he's 70.4% accurate on his throws. He's almost thrown for 1,000 yards already, 923 yards. He averages 11.5 yards per throw, 11 touchdowns, and one interception. This redshirt senior has been taking a meaningful number of snaps since he was a redshirt freshman, throwing for 1,100 yards that year, a little bit over 1,700 yards the year after, and then throwing for a whopping 3,335 yards last year, including 27 touchdowns and 8 interceptions. Probably more interceptions than he would have liked, but still, that's a pretty good ratio. Baron does a good job of sitting in the pocket pretty patiently. He's got really active feet, meaning he doesn't get stagnant. He is always on the move. He doesn't let the pass rush pressure him into making rash decisions, though he does occasionally show lack of awareness of that pass rush, especially when it's coming faster on the end. So He's calm. He's cool. He's collected. He's moving his feet, but he's not anxious. He's not antsy. When he's in the pocket, he uses his eyes really well, whether he's looking off a safety, which what looking off a safety means, I know I'm going to throw to the left, so I'm going to look to the right and make the defense flow that way. And then quickly, I'm going to turn back to the left and throw to where I know my receiver is waiting for me. So he's really good at looking off safeties. He can redirect linebackers to set up screens, or he actually uses his eyes well, just going through his reads. Like you can see as you're watching this guy play football, he's methodical. He's, you know, read number one, not there. Read number two, not there. Read number three, because his feet and his hips and his shoulders are so active and they're moving the way they're supposed to, he can pull the trigger and throw that ball really quickly. So like I just said, his shoulders and his hips rotate like they should. They're always cocked, ready to deliver the football. This guy is rarely late to a read. Texas Tech will let this man run the football, whether it's a speed option or a read option or design quarterback keeper. Morton will run, and he almost always falls forward for more yardage while doing so. I don't think he's necessarily the most athletic runner. He's not the biggest, toughest guy, but like I said, he's got experience. He knows what he's doing. I mean, 70% for almost 1,000 yards and 11 touchdowns just three games in. Even having only played, you know, some lighter competition, I still think is very impressive. The next guy to pay attention to on the offensive side of the ball, running back number 20, Jacoby Williams. He's smaller, 5'10", 185 pounds, sophomore. He's had 28 carries for 158 yards and two touchdowns, which is good production. It's moderate production. You'll see this guy on the field, and you'll need to pay as much attention to him on the ground as you will through the air. In fact, more so through the air, I think. He is their third most productive pass catcher. He's had 11 receptions and 150 yards of receiving. He averages 13.6 yards per catch. He's small, but he's fast. He's shifty. He has good hands. He's very smart too, by the way, and patient enough to wait for his blockers to set up, whether it's a run play or a pass play or a screen play. He's small enough that he can hide behind those big offensive linemen, but he's explosive enough to make you pay if you don't plug gaps right when they open up. Similar to Wyoming last week with Chris Durr Jr., Texas Tech tries to, you know, they try to find quick and easy ways to get the ball into the hands of Jacoby Williams as fast as possible. Things like screen passes, swing passes, designed one read passes where it's, you know, hey, we already know before the snap we're throwing this ball to Jacoby. Don't get it twisted though. You know, he's small. Yeah, he's fast. Yeah, he does most of his production through the air. He will drop his shoulder on you though. His speed and his power to size ratio makes him hard to locate, hard to get a hand on him, and even harder to bring him down if you do happen to get a hand on him. Another running back to keep an eye out for, number 8, Cameron Dickey. He's a little bit bigger, 5'10", 215 pounds. He's a sophomore. He's had more yards on the ground than Jacoby Williams. I think he's more of a second option. He's got 4 touchdowns, averages a little bit less than 5 yards per carry. You know, I don't think it's as much of a threat as Jacoby Williams, but definitely someone that I'm sure the Utes have scouted and someone you'll want to look out for as well. Tight ends and wide receivers. This is where Texas Tech likes to make their money. They have 5 receivers and tight ends with greater than 130 yards receiving on the year so far. The first one, a guy they got in the transfer portal, number 7, Terrence Carter Jr. He's their tight end. He's 6'2", 245, maybe 250 pounds. Kind of an interesting size for a tight end. He's not the tallest dude out there, but he's strong. He's a little bit heavier. He's got some meat on him. He's got 10 receptions for just under 200 yards. He's got 3 touchdowns. Boasts an average reception of 19.4 yards. He's quick for a big man. He's strong. He can get out in space. He hurdled a guy last week. He's probably Baron Morton's second favorite target after Jacoby Williams. As far as wide receivers are concerned, a couple different guys to look at. And again, this is where, you know, I wish I had more time. If I did this professionally, I have more time during the week to look at all the receivers that these guys track down in the transfer portal. There's probably a couple guys I'm missing. I go largely based off of film that I can, whatever film I can find, You know, I don't spend 4 hours rewatching entire games. I'll watch the condensed versions, and I'm probably missing some guys that are in the transfer portal that came through the transfer portal that are maybe haven't done as much so far this year and are really touted and expected to do more. But so far, just based on current production, Texas Tech's best receivers are number 3, Coy Eakin. He's a 6'2", 210-pound junior. He's had 12 receptions for 245 yards. That's the highest on the team. 3 touchdowns, and he averages 20.5 yards a catch. He's already well on his way to beating what he did last year in 2024. He had 650 yards on the season. He is the most commonly targeted wide receiver option. Number 5, Caleb Douglas. He's a bigger dude. He's 6'4", 210-pound senior. He had 6 receptions for 142 yards so far this year, 1 touchdown, and he also averages more than 20 yards a catch. In fact, he almost averages 24 yards per reception. This is the dude that had a great day against the Beavers last weekend. He's long. He's faster than he looks, honestly. If you give him any space, he will use his size to his advantage, and he can either get up high for the ball because of his height, or he can use his length to go out wide and get it. Here's the thing. A lot of these guys, you know, Coy Eakin, receiver number 3, Caleb Douglas, receiver number 5, Terrence Carter Jr., tight end number 7, Jacoby Williams, running back number 20, all these guys, they have played a lot of snaps over a number of years. And yes, some of them are young, you know, maybe sophomores, but Utah's defense will be going up against an offense full of athletes who have been on the field long enough to know how to handle themselves in an atmosphere like the one they're going to see on Saturday morning. The more I prep for this game, the more excited I am and the more anticipation I feel, because I'm starting to understand that this really is a great matchup. This is best versus best in the Big 12 right now, and I honestly believe that. I will say, over the last couple of weeks, I've been guilty of not covering as much information on these different teams' offensive or defensive lines. I'm going to try to be better, because we all know how crucial line play is to the success of a football team. This week, I don't have any names for the big boys up front because I'm late again to recording and posting after coming back from California. But let me tell you, it is not uncommon for Baron Morton to have 4-plus seconds to throw the ball, especially against Oregon State this last weekend. And I know you're going to say, oh, it's just Oregon State. But come on, I mean, they might not be as good as they were a couple years back, but Oregon State is still basically a Power 5 football team, right? This Texas Tech O-line, they're big, they're strong, they're talented, they're really smart. They pass off rushers really well. They rarely let anyone get to Morton. If they, you know, if they twist or they pinch or they, whatever they do, whatever the defensive line does, they can pass protect, they can form a good pocket, but they also know how to move well downfield when it comes to run blocking and setting up screens. And you know, let's talk a little bit about that, why that's important. Earlier I mentioned the air raid offense. Let's jump into their offensive playbook a little bit to understand the value of this offensive line. This is an offense, the air raid offense, that predicates itself on getting the ball into players' hands through the air most of the time, which that seems pretty straightforward, right? That's like, oh, that's like a spread offense, right? But it's not just as simple as saying they pass a lot, right? A spread offense passes a lot. They'll throw, you know, short, they'll throw medium, they'll throw deep, they'll throw to the boundary, they'll throw to the middle of the field, etc. An air raid offense will do that. But it's not as simple as saying, like, in a spread offense, it's like, okay, you 4 or 5 receivers, go run downfield, run your routes, and we'll throw the ball to whoever's open, right? We'll go through our reads, you know, read number 1, not there, read number 2, not there, read number 3, there he is, boom, okay? With an air raid offense, it's almost planned. It's a blocked swing pass to the boundary. It's a quick spot pass out wide to a receiver. It's a middle screen. Yeah, they will have passes where, hey, we're going to have a couple route combinations. Quarterback's going to drop back, you know, 5 or 7 step drop and make the read and throw. That's fine. But it's typically speaking, an air raid offense is their targeted plays meant for specific players in specific spaces. It's designed to draw your defense's attention to a specific athlete, to a specific part of the field, so that you take your attention away from another athlete on another part of the field, and so on and so forth. Okay, so these guys run mostly out of a shotgun or a pistol formations. Okay. Usually, you know, when they're in pistol, they're going to be running the ball. Not always. You know, occasionally they'll use it for a play action pass or something like that. But a pistol formation, like we talked about last week, you know, quarterback in the backfield, taking a shotgun snap, running back 3 or 4 yards behind him. Usually they're doing that so the running back can get some momentum and get downhill, okay, if they're going to run the ball. From a run blocking scheme perspective, Texas Tech will run a lot of different things. I love offenses that make defenses prepare for them, okay? It's not as simple as saying, you know, hey, I'm, you know, I do have respect for offensive coordinators that say, I'm not going to make my playbook overly complicated because I'm confident that I'm just, our athletes are just better than your athletes are. And that's great. I love that. It'd be awesome if, you know, you're from one of those areas like Alabama or Texas or wherever where you have that. But the reality is in Utah, we've grown up having to be smart and play good schemes and work hard and play with a chip on our shoulder and to be good tacticians, right? So I love offenses that make you prepare for them because they run so many different schemes and they're confident in their players' ability to know those schemes. So run blocking schemes, they include some basic ones like a zone read. We've talked about that a lot. They do a version of a read option. Again, a read option is where a quarterback and just one running back are going to kind of do this song and dance where the running back's going to run one way, and if the defense follows the running back, then the quarterback will pull the ball and run. If the quarterback, you know, goes to hand the ball off to the running back and the defensive line kind of sits and waits, then he's going to hand the ball off to the running back. They do something called the load option, which is essentially a read option with an extra blocker or two. So they're saying, you know, hey, we're gonna really make this, you know, we're not going to try to spread you out and make you think we might be passing or doing a run pass option. We're going to load this up and really run at you with this option. They'll do a stretch, which is almost like a sweep, but rather than the ball being pitched, it's just handed off really wide. Okay, they're going to do some reach blocking on the offensive line, which means at the snap of the ball, you're going to see all the linemen run really fast laterally towards the sideline to try to get an angle on the defensive line and just the defensive backfield in general and try to create a wall to run to that sideline. Okay, they'll run some power where they do some pulling of tackles. Everyone's going to block down towards the middle of the field. And then the backside tackle or the backside guard will pull and kick out the defensive end or the linebacker on the end of the line of scrimmage. Lots of different looks from the running perspective. Again, like I said, number 20, Jacoby Williams, he can get it done on the ground. He really can. So you want to look out for that. From a passing perspective, like I said, it's a lot of specific single read targeted throws, right? It's a quick spot pass out wide. You know, they'll run swing passes. They'll run screens. They'll run quick outs, things like that. They're throws where, you know, it's a good thing that Baron Morton has so long to throw the ball because he doesn't really even need it. It's cool that he has 4 seconds or 5 seconds when he wants it, but he doesn't often need it. Usually it's snap 1-1000, 2-1000, and it's the ball is thrown by 2-1000. Generally speaking, you know, in college football to be successful, the ball should be out by 3 seconds. In the NFL, between 2 and 2.5 seconds is if that ball's not out, you're done for. So this kid, his offense allows him to just turn, make the throw. If it's not there, you know, maybe there's another read involved. Maybe he pulls it down. Maybe he throws it away. Maybe he's really smart, right? So looking for a high powered offense from the Texas Tech Red Raiders against Utah's really solid defense. I think this is, again, we talked about how exciting of a matchup this is. I think that Utah's defense is one of the best. I think it's certainly one of the best in the Big 12. I think it's one of the best in the country. I think Texas Tech offense is the same way. I think their offense is one of the better offenses in the Big 12. I think it probably is a top 15 or top 20 offense in the country. So it really is best versus best. Texas Tech's offense versus Utah's defense. If we flip the field, talk about Texas Tech's defense. Defensive coordinator Sheil Wood is also in his first year as a coordinator for the Red Raiders. Coach Wood is coming off a season where he transformed Houston into one of the best defenses in the Big 12 in 2024, including a notable win at home against a struggling Utah team, by the way. That loss in Houston was probably Utah's low point last year. So it's safe to say that Kyle Whittingham would like to prove to Coach Wood that his defenses are not up to the task for a second year in a row. Coach Wood has been the defensive coordinator at several schools that have needed defensive tune-ups in the last couple years. He was at Army in 2001, where they were 9-4. He was at Troy in 2022, where Troy went 12-2. And he was the defensive coordinator at Tulane 2 years ago in 2023, where they went 11-3. I mean, it makes me think of the phrase defense wins championships. I don't think it is a coincidence that schools like Army, like Troy, like Tulane, like Houston, schools that have, you know, traditionally struggled a lot over the last decade and a half, you know, that the year that they finally have a good year is the year that he was brought in to be their one-year defensive coordinator. He's, like I said, he's like the consultant you hire to bring in and fix your defense. I think this game will be very telling for Utah's offense. Will they be stymied against one of the greatest current defensive minds in college football? Or will they prove that they finally have what it takes to be as great as Utah's defense? They have what it takes to get it done, and you know, will they win a Power Four conference championship as well as win the game that comes as a result of winning that conference championship? Whether, you know, it used to be the Rose Bowl for the Pac-12. Now it's a college football playoff berth. You know, can you go to the conference championship? Can you win the conference championship? Can you win a game after that conference championship? All depends on Utah's offensive ability. Okay, not all, a lot of it. Defensively, Coach Wood, he prefers to run a 4-3 for the most part. He will run occasionally when it calls for it, a 3-4, which is one of the first times we've seen that this year. He obviously does nickel, 4-2-5, not all the time, occasionally. Like I said, his base defense is definitely more of a 4-3. The reason for that, we'll talk about this in a minute with personnel, this team has a lot of good linebackers. So he is definitely designing his defense around the talent that he has on his roster. He also will go in longer passing downs or down and distance situations. He'll go with what's called a dime defense. We talked about that last week, which is, you know, you actually take some of your linebackers out, leave yourself just a single linebacker, or maybe take some of your faster, more agile linebackers and drop them back as safeties. Now you have, you know, three or four defensive linemen, one single linebacker, and then like five or six defensive backs and corners and safeties. So as far as blitzing or stunting packages that Texas Tech will bring out, they have a decent amount of linebacker blitzing, either from the defensive backfield, you know, 3 or 4 yards back, or lined up on the edge as a walked-up backer or a stand-up end. When I talk about a stand-up end, that means a defensive end, typically on the edge of the line of scrimmage, the guy that's mostly on the outside, usually is down in a three-point stance or a four-point stance. But occasionally, it's not, you know, strategically the best approach. Occasionally, they'll do so from a stand-up position, almost like a receiver stance, okay? They did use a couple corner blitzes, maybe one or two corner blitzes, during the game against Oregon State. And they primarily will sit in cover one or cover two, okay? When they're in cover two, they tend to leave medium depth boundary throws open, because what happens in a cover two is you've got your cornerbacks on either side. They're going to sit in the flat, sit, you know, in the first 10 yards or so between the sideline and kind of the middle of the field. And then you've got your linebackers that are going to sit in either the two middle or the three middle zones, in those first 10 to 12 yards. And then you've got, safeties. You got two safeties that are going to cover the two deep halves. So if you think about that, you've got room where if your cornerback sits in that shallow zone, those first, you know, 5 to 10 yards, maybe 10 to 12 yards, and then you've got a safety who's in the middle of the field and has to cover an entire half of the field, the furthest spot for the safety to get to is going to be between 12 and 20 yards right on the boundary. You can throw over the corner, but if you throw in that spot, the safety has to run about, you know, let's see, 26 and a half yards to get to that ball. So it's a spot that they will leave open if you can put that ball right at that spot, 15 to 20 yards downfield, right on the boundary. Texas Tech does a good job of mixing up their looks when they line up on the ball, just like Wyoming last week. Sometimes they show blitz. Sometimes they don't show blitz. Sometimes they actually do blitz. Sometimes they drop into coverage. You never really know what's coming. Just looking at what you see as their alignment before the snap doesn't necessarily match what's coming. And I love that defensively. Like, it's a great way to go about it. Stunting is very smart. It confuses the quarterback. It prevents him from getting a beat on what you're doing and when you're doing it. It forces the quarterback and offensive coordinator in general to have to be a lot more disciplined on watching film and predicting what you're going to do based on your history. Their defense doesn't change much once they get into the red zone. Once they start to get backed up a little bit, they stay pretty regular. They stay in that 4-3 also in goal line situations. They'll occasionally drop another defensive lineman into the game for a 5-2, a five-man front with two linebackers, or they'll simply, again, just use that 4-3 formation and walk up a linebacker onto the line of scrimmage as a walk-up or a stand-up defensive end or with a five-man front. As far as personnel are concerned, the defensive line, there probably are some personnel here that we could talk about, but in the interest of time, I think it would suffice to say that this group for Tech is good, maybe even pretty good, but not great. They have one sack between all of them on the defensive line, and that's against two very low-level teams so far. I think they will be the toughest D-line that Utah has played against thus far, but if our O-line can do what we know they're capable of doing, we should be able to break into the second level with our running game. That being said, the linebacker group is Texas Tech's most complete position group. This is a solid group of linebackers. This is core of the three linebackers. Number 10, Jacob Rodriguez, number 13, Ben Roberts, and number 6, John Curry. They're all about 6'2", 6'3", 230 pounds. They've all got between 13 and 15 tackles. Those three are the team's three leading tacklers. Okay. They are decent run fillers. They can fill the gaps. They can plug the holes. They're okay in pass coverage. They're a little slow to get lateral to the boundary. But they each have a pass deflection or two. So they're well-rounded. They tend to be really aggressive and really good at defending the run. There are two other linebackers that get fewer snaps, but definitely contribute defensively. Number 9, Romello Height, who has 2.5 sacks for negative 17 yards. And number 31, David Bailey, 2.5 sacks for negative 25 yards. Who's, by the way, he's 250 pounds. It's a big boy. So if you're wondering, if you're watching the game on Saturday, wondering, well, how is Utah going to do? Are we going to be successful? Watch Texas Tech's linebacking crew, linebacking core. If they're, you know, doing well, if they're being aggressive, if they're blowing up the offensive line, Utah's going to have a hard time. Moving on to defensive backfield. Tech's defensive backs are very involved in the run game as well, which bodes well for Utah because it means that either A, running backs are getting to the second level and beyond, or B, defensive backs tend to suck up a lot on the expecting running downs. They, as well as the linebacking group, tend to be moved well with misdirection, whether it's play-action passes, a counter run, reverse or something like that, or a QB moving them with his eyes and shoulders, something that I'm not convinced that Devin Dampier can do very well, or at least does do very well. Several times against Oregon State, cornerback and safety pairs would get crossed up during crossing routes. So say you have two offensive receivers that are lined up fairly close to one another, maybe a couple yards apart, and the one receiver is going to run an in route, and the other receiver is going to run an out route, and they're going to cross, right? If Texas Tech is in man coverage, either the safety and the cornerback need to just allow those receivers to switch and they switch their coverage, or they need to be athletic and fast enough to run, one one person over, one person under, and stay with their receivers. Multiple times during those types of situations, they get crossed up, and it leaves the receiver wide open, usually on the boundary. Again, I'm not going to spend a lot of time on specific personnel here, but this is another example of how well Utah and Texas Tech match up, and why I think this game should be a good battle. Utah doesn't have an amazing receiving core. They're not bad, but they're still trying to establish themselves, as is Devin Dampier and his ability to throw for larger chunk plays downfield. Tech's defensive backfield isn't awesome either, but I think they'll be up to the task of defending Utah's wide receivers and tight ends. Now, whether they'll be able to do that and keep an eye out for a scrambling quarterback remains to be seen. That's basically it for the scouting report. Again, I think they match up so well. Utah's offense, good, not great. Texas Tech's defense, good, not great. Utah's defense, amazing. Texas Tech's offense, amazing. I think this is going to be a really amazing game. It's so fun, such a high-energy game. It really remains to be seen what both these teams are going to do this year at these conferences. I think it's going to be a close game. I'm calling something like 27-24. I'm going to go with my Utes. And that is going to wrap it up for this week's episode. Go Utes.